The Madison Choral Project is not just a choir, it's a movement to improve our human experience through music. So says the website of the Madison Choral Project. How can a choir be a project? I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Air. Joining me to explore music, people, and community, the Madison Choral Project, is its artistic director, Dr. Albert Pinsano. Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, let's start with that idea of a choir as a project.
Yes.
Why is it not just the Madison Choir? Why Madison Choral Project?
Well, project just sounds so cool. No, it's the whole idea of people getting together and trying to make our lives better. That's really what art is about. And art is about connecting with people and trying to express something, part of our human experience. One of the wonderful things about music as an art form is we can find how connected we are to all of these other people, composers in the past, and we realize that though the day-to-day logistics of their life were maybe very different than ours, so much of their life experience was the same. They had things they wanted they couldn't have. They experienced joy and pain. They wanted to be loved. And that is a universal part of the human experience. What we get to do in choral music is such an amazing part of that because music has an ability to capture the emotive quality of express the emotive quality of what we're feeling with such transparency, and that we get to do that in a way that has text, and we get to have a poet guide us and a composer, and get to make music together as a community. These are all very, very, very powerful things.
I used to be an orchestral musician, an oboist, and you know, there you have the joy of making music with a lot of different instrumentalists and so on. But it always looked so easy if you looked at a choir because they didn't have to haul around cellos and you know, all these different instruments that could do things like have stuck keys or broken strings and that sort of thing. I mean, the choir just sings. It's,
that's right.
In a sense, there's nothing between the person and the music other than their voice coming out.
Right. You've captured it exactly, and that's what makes it so freeing and also so challenging, because you can't buy a better voice. You are what you are, and there's part of that that is so wonderful because we're all flawed. No one's perfect. And to get to use our voices, to have the challenge to use our voices and have the music come directly from the human body and not to travel through any sort of medium, be it a stereo or an oboe or whatever, is really a tremendous opportunity.
It's hard if you get a cold, though.
It is hard if you get a cold. We have all of the labored with all of those things that all of us deal with every day. Lack of sleep, bad diet, traveling, sickness, and trying to persevere and perform anyway.
So tell me specifically about the Madison Choral Project. What is it? When did it get started? Why are you its director and so on?
Sure. Well, I came to Madison in 2009, and after 3 or 4 years, I felt that there was a tremendous love of choral music in Madison, Wisconsin. There especially was, well, there's always been a very strong music program at the University of Wisconsin and a very strong choral program. But especially there was a renowned choral figure by the name of Robert Fountain,
yes,
who was just considered one of the geniuses in choral music in the United States, and it became a real destination point for young conductors to come study And I think because of Fountain, there just was an incredible audience that grew and has been maintained in this city because the excellent tradition of choral music has maintained. But as great as all of that was, there wasn't a professional choir. There are two wonderful professional orchestras. There's a professional opera company. Lots of great, great, great art happening. But not that kind of opportunity for the singers out there. So I got together with one or two others, and we had the idea to try to raise money to put on a concert. That would be a small group of elite vocalists, and we would pay them all as well as we could for their time. And it snowballed from there.
And who's in the Madison Choral Project then? Is it one big choir? Is it several choirs?
We have, it's sort of, the word project has a couple meanings because we come together for projects. So we don't rehearse every week throughout the year. We have a concert and we contract singers for that concert and we get together for maybe 7 or 8 rehearsals and then give a concert or two. So in that's one sense of the word project. Many of those singers are the same, but actually we have only had a small number of singers that have done every single concert. Right now the group is 22 singers, 11 women and 11 men. And that's a great number. And it's just the right where there's enough voices to have a blended, unified sound, but there's not so many that not every single voice is important.
Can you give us an example from, you know, one of the recordings you have from past concerts of the kind of music that your group would do?
Yes, of course. Why don't we listen to a little bit of a piece called Gallant Weaver. This is by the contemporary Scottish composer James McMillan, and it features three of our wonderful soprano soloists on this recording. It is Marie McManama, Chelsea Probst, and Rachel Edie Warwick. And you will hear their vocal lines. They sing in kind of a canon, so their vocal lines weave backward and forward, and they express the text of a young Scottish lass who has been betrothed to one person, but really she is in love with the town weaver, the gallant weaver, and you can hear in that line of weaving back and forth where her heart lies.
Thank you.
That's absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you.
There's something about choir music that always makes me feel like I've woken up in heaven. You know, there's this sort of ethereal sound, very spiritual sound to it. I'm trying to figure out what that is exactly, but maybe it's the disembodied voices or...
You know, I think that we as humans have a natural reaction to the human voice. We've been listening to our... Hopefully, we've been listening to our mothers and fathers from the time when we were young, and we use our voices every day to communicate our thoughts and needs and desires. And so it's a medium that we're very familiar with at a certain level, even if we're not somebody that goes to choral concerts regularly, because it's fundamentally the same instrument. And the expression part of it, the fact that we use this instrument to express through, you know, purchasing coffee every morning, is the same at a fundamental level than what you would do on the stage to give a speech or to act a role or to come together collaboratively to create music.
Well, I think also choral music is woven into so many religious traditions.
Yes.
You have hymns, you have spirituals, you have gospel, but this idea of lifting up one's voices and somehow giving praise or reaching up to the heavens, it's sort of built into a lot of religious traditions.
Yes, that's correct.
Are most of the pieces that you perform a cappella with no accompaniment or instruments behind you?
Most of them are. Because we enjoy the challenge of that kind of music, and there's a lot of a cappella, great, great, wonderful a cappella music written for chamber choirs like us. But we have done music with instruments in the past, and we'll be doing so again in the future.
Is there another recorded piece? Obviously, that was a live performance, too. Mm-hmm. You can hear the coughs and the claps and everything else. Is there another piece from your group that illustrates sort of a different style of music, different use of the voices?
Absolutely. That piece expressed a lot of longing, the pining for that which one cannot have. There's another piece that is... an African-American spiritual by Moses Hogan called My Soul's Been Anchored in the Lord. And that's a piece that really shows the kind of determination and joy that happens when a community is working together.
That one makes me feel like jumping up in joy. That definitely has a different mood.
That's right. Yeah, the palette of emotional possibilities are pretty endless.
And you can hear the call and response and the syncopated rhythms and all kinds
Absolutely.
Of other things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to look more at the Madison Choral Project and sample more choral music when we continue in a moment with the University of the Year. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Dr. Albert Pinsonneau, and we are talking about the Madison Choral Project. It's a group of professional singers in the Madison area that is performing different kinds of music. I notice on your website that you talk about in your mission statement that the goal of the project is to enrich lives in our community by giving voice to the great music of our diverse world, to express, to inspire, to heal, to garner joy in the experience of live music, and to educate and strengthen the next generation of singers and listeners. Those are pretty mm-hmm. noble goals.
We think so.
And does that influence your choice of music?
Absolutely. We try to do as broad of a range of music as possible and always to work to strengthen our connections within the community. But in particular, coming up later this month, we're going to be doing a new genre for us, which is kind of a jazz classical fusion piece. It's the composer, David Baker, actually just recently passed away in April of 2016. We had programmed this music long before knowing that that was going to happen. He lived a long and wonderful life and is a preeminent jazz educator and worked for a long time at the University of Indiana. He founded one of the first jazz studies programs in the country and really brought the study of jazz into schools of music in the 20th century. For a long time, it was not seen as the equal as the study of the Western canon of music. And so back in the 70s, Professor Baker was one of the first great people to elevate the study of jazz music. And he wrote a piece based on the poetry of Mari Evans, who is also an Indiana poet, worked at the Purdue, Indiana University Purdue for a long time, is another African-American, and wrote some wonderful text that kind of speaks to the underprivileged experience in America. And you asked me earlier in the program if we ever worked with instrumentalists, and mm-hmm. this is one piece where we actually get to work with five instruments, which is so exciting. Members of the Madison Symphony Orchestra and some other professional players. But it's basically a kind of a jazz combo plus a classical Western chamber choir. So it's a great way that those two groups fuse together.
I'm looking forward to hearing the performance. It seems as if it's also carrying on a tradition that Langston Hughes worked on, where
Absolutely.
You know, with his publication in 1926 of Weary Blues, and this whole idea that you could elevate the form of jazz or the form of African-American vernacular music to high literature. I mean, he was sometimes called the Shakespeare of Harlem, but
Absolutely.
You have this notion that we can redefine what classical or good music is.
Right. Or not even redefine, simply just define it. You know, so often it mm-hmm. comes, we come from a specific training or a specific set of sort of predisposed upon ideals about what we expect in art. And one of the amazing parts of my life as I get a little bit older and older every year is just coming to appreciate how beautiful the world is and how rich it is in expression and how that can take on so many forms, whether it is one that is notated in a specific way to be replicated on in a certain stage for a certain audience, or whether it is something that occurs out in the world, or whether it's an unexpected interaction. So often, any of those things can be profound or even life-changing. And so opening one's eyes up to experience art kind of and at any moment just makes the world a richer, more fulfilling place to live in.
And what is the name of this piece by David Baker?
This piece is called Images, Shadows, and Dreams, Five Vignettes. And it's five short tableau scenes, kind of images of life. The first one is called Rents Due Monday and is really lovely description of kind of a tenement building, and the rent is due, the heat's not on, trying to heat the kitchen with the oven, but that's not working. The character from across the hallway who is in her two knit hats and three coats, and all done with a really lovely jazz background. Can we hear some of it?
Yes, and now this recording that you have is not your group this time, but
this is a professional choir from the Twin Cities called Vocal Essence, who recorded this work a few years ago, and it's really a great recording.
That's a really powerful poem and setting.
Yes, it is.
That, especially that last line, the rent's due Monday, and you just kind of hear the oppression of it.
There's two pieces of oppression, the cold that is unescapable, and also the unescapable fact that the rent is due. And what I love about it is it's not set in a oh, pity me type sound. It's set, you know, just describing life.
Well, in the part two where it talks about would heat the kitchen with the oven, except the oven doesn't heat. You know, it's, you have this idea and that even doesn't work.
Right.
And so I'm always interested in the collaboration that happens or the process of taking a poem, a text, and then setting it to music. Is this something where the two people involved, Mary Evans, the poet, and then David Baker, the composer, both from Indiana, work together at all? Or it's an after-the-fact thing where a poem is written and then the composer just takes off with it?
It can happen so many different ways. But what's most common is that a composer will immerse themselves in poetry and find a poem, an existing poem that speaks to the composer, and then set it to music with permission. So I'm guessing that's how this collaboration happened.
And it's must be especially powerful for your group if you're performing a piece where the composer just died the month earlier. And it sort of, I guess, reminds people of the power of art to help someone live on in terms of their artistic vision. But
absolutely, it's amazing. You know, we're still talking about Bach, and we'll still be talking about David Baker later this month. And it's a great way for, you know, legacy is an overused term, but the composer puts themselves and their spirit and their ideas down on the page in the music, and it's our responsibility as performers to try to replicate that as well as possible.
And will those who come to hear the performances on May 20th and 22nd at the First Congregational Church in Madison, will they have copies of the text? Because sometimes when you're listening to a piece of music, just the way with an opera, they put the subtitles up or closed captions sometimes. Sometimes it's hard to get a poem completely when it's sung like that.
Right. I'm so glad you asked, because we actually take pains to put all of the text to all of our pieces in the program. Sometimes we are not allowed to, and that's the only reason we don't. Living poets don't necessarily want their poems printed for obvious copyright reasons. And we still try to contact living poets and ask permissions, and if the cost is doable for us, then we always try to do that. Because I think it adds so much to be able to, like you're saying, read along, to take in the full meaning of what's happening. And also we try to create entire concerts of music where maybe it's many different pieces, but the texts follow a theme and can complement one another.
In this particular piece, Images, Shadows, and Dreams, five vignettes by David Baker, are the five vignettes or sketches, are they all surrounding a certain place or theme? What is the link between this first sketch that we heard, the Rent's Due Monday, and the next one?
You know, sometimes there are themes like being one of less privilege in America, having fewer resources is a common theme. But the next movement is just a beautiful description of an old man. And it's called the Nonagenarian. And I'll just read a little bit of the beginning of the text. It's there's a tie between Nonagenarian and November. So the, you know, what would have been the ninth month, you know, I'll use air quotes for that, if it weren't for some of those Romans, and the ninth decade. And it says, his hand itself, the autumn leaf, and he in his November dried and sucking from the sun. I love that image of the hand being like an autumn leaf. I think that you can learn so much about somebody's life by looking at their hands, mm-hmm. and especially the hands of older people. Just, I feel, have so much to say, and I love that image of the hand being like this leaf and then the whole person being somehow just a little dried, and the person being in their own November, maybe towards the close of their days. It's wonderful. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
Really captures this 90-year-old mm-hmm. man. I like the description of him as a package used and battered, but with superior compassion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It draws me into that figure, too. I think it's great, great poetry.
We're going to look more at the Madison Choral Project when we continue in a moment with University of the Year. Thank you. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Albert Pinceneau, and we are talking about the Madison Choral Project. Specifically, we are sampling from a group called Vocal Essence out of Minneapolis, Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. We're sampling a piece that the Choral Project is going to be performing in Madison May 20th and 22nd at the First Congregational Church. We'll put a link to their website on our University of the Air page at Wisconsin Public Radio. But we've been sampling a work called Images, Shadows, and Dreams, Five Vignettes by David Baker, who died last month, settings of poems by Mary Evans, mm-hmm. Both of them African-American, and picking up on a lot of sort of themes having to do with oppression, survival, mm-hmm. And also using jazz as one of the ways that the choir can express that. The third sketch. Mm-hmm. We've listened to two, The Rent's Due Monday and the one about the 90-year-old, the nonagenarian. Mm-hmm. The third sketch, If There Be Sorrow, tell me about that one.
Well, I love this poem because this poem doesn't need to derive from any particular experience. It just is good advice for living, I think. If there be sorrow, then let it be. For things undone, for things unrealized, unattained. So it's the poem is affirmational in the sense of it's okay to be sad, but be sad for not trying. Don't be afraid of failure. It's a really a wonderful, wonderful little setting and one of the shorter movements of the work.
As I was listening to that, I was thinking, you know, sometimes we do hear like a boys' choir or a women's choir, but there is something special in the sound when you've got the balance of men and women and you've got that soprano, alto, tenor, mm-hmm. bass.
They really hit on something when they got to that.
Yeah.
You know, just like our everyday experience, it's the mix of, you know, higher voice women and lower voice women, higher voice men and lower voice men, and sort of the whole range of people that, you know, sort of ostensibly are trying to capture that whole range of people that make up the human race.
I was also thinking, I was listening to the If There Be Sorrow movement of this piece. In the Odyssey Project, we teach Frederick Douglass's mm-hmm. narrative of his escape from slavery. He has a passage about how one of the things that awakened him to the dehumanizing nature of slavery was hearing the sorrow songs, that something in the sound of the voices expressing sorrow as they worked in the fields, that is where he traced his first glimmer of the injustice.
Right.
you know, that sorrow songs go way back in American history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a powerful truth.
With the remaining two sketches that you have in this piece, Images, Shadows, and Dreams, can you tell me about those?
Yes. The Rebel is the fourth movement, and it's kind of fun. Somebody talking about imagining their own funeral and trying to guess at how many people will arrive, and has a, you know, a somewhat a tongue-in-cheek ending, which I won't ruin. The final movement is Let Me Tell You How to Meet the Day, which is also a great poem, basically expressing an attitude, a philosophy about life to have. And it's a great kind of capstone, starting off in this very real-world first movement with definite, immediate needs and problems. And then kind of moving on to, there's the old man in the second movement, this beautiful depiction of a long, long life and somebody's nearing the close of that. And then the talk about if you're to be sad about something, have that sadness be for things left undone, not for the things that you've tried. Moving into having a little fun and then ending with this idea of how to greet the day, how to position your disposition as you walk through life. So it's a really wonderful, complete set of music.
So you figure out how to meet the day even if the rent's due?
That's right.
It kind of comes full circle to that Monday that's coming.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
If people come to a Madison Choral Project concert, what do you hope that they walk out that door feeling?
Thank you for asking, because I think that too many people, whether they love classical music or not, have the idea that, well, okay, I'm going to go and I'll hear some beautiful things, but I just need to sit still and quietly and hope that I'm captured and then leave. And one thing that we're working really hard to change the whole idea of what a concert is, because it is so easy to listen to whatever our hearts desire for free without leaving our house. And so when people choose to take their time to go to a space to hear music without any distraction, we take that responsibility really seriously. And so we try to do more than provide 8 or 4 or 10 beautiful pieces of music together, but we really try hard to create an experience so that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So from the moment somebody walks in the door and sits down, they're going to be given some greater themes to ponder. Hopefully all the text will be in the program that they can read along with and think about. And there'll be an overall arc, you know, emotionally to the whole evening, however long it is. And that at the end, there will have been a greater sort of artistic statement that comes about from having traveled along the path through all of these pieces.
And there's the joy of just being part of live music being created where
Absolutely.
Anything can happen. And I do appreciate the inclusivity of inviting the Odyssey Project to students who have severe financial need here in the Madison
Absolutely.
Community be part of the audience and part of the production as well. As we close, I, you know, first I'll thank my guest, Dr. Albert Pinsonneau with the Madison Choral Project, but let's go out on one of your choir's pieces, something that we can listen to as we go out.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me in. It's been a lot of fun. Speaking of live music, we'll go back to a live recording. This is a piece by Dan Forrest, and it is called Entreat Me Not to Leave You. And I think it's the kind of piece that recordings of it sound beautiful, but if you can imagine being in the space and seeing humans in front of you creating the art in time, it just is very powerful. And thanks again for having me in.
My pleasure. I'm Emily Auerbach, hoping you'll join us for the next hour of University of the Year.